Welcome to Classics Now, the radio program of the North Coast Great Books Discussion Group. I'm Solomon Iverta, and I'm here with the mellifluous Mary Harper to discuss this month's selection. What do we have this month, Mary?
We have Elizabeth Barrett Browning's poetry. I think probably a lot of people will remember her most famous poem, How Do I Love Thee, Let Me Count the Ways, which is one of the sonnets from the Portuguese. They may not remember much else, and they may not have a very good response to that particular memory. Her language is a little bit awkward for us in this day and age. It's very Victorian and flowery, but underneath, there's an awful lot of emotion going on, as we discovered in our discussion.
Yeah, I think everyone harkened back to high school and brought up some memories for all of us.
Indeed. She was born in 1806 to a very wealthy family, but their wealth was founded on slavery. They owned a lot of estates in Jamaica. She was actually the first of her family to be born in England instead of Jamaica. So she was also the first of 12 children, 11 of whom lived to adulthood, which shows you the power of money. Back in those days, that was pretty rare. She was, it was an odd family. There are hints that there may have been black blood in her family because of the stay in Jamaica. No one is, I mean, that's debated, and no one is sure of that. But her father had this weird thing of not letting any of his children marry. And the supposition is that he didn't want that black blood to be continued. She was a very, very precocious child. She was bright right from the beginning. She began writing her poetry at age 6. Mm-hmm. So she was right in there, right from the get-go. But she got ill in her teenage years. She and her sisters all fell ill at the same time, and her sisters recovered, but she did not. And she was in a great deal of pain for most of her life, and very ill, and took laudanum a lot. So it's even more amazing, I think, that she produced as much as she did, considering that she was ill from that time.
Well, maybe that helped her.
Well, it kept her in her room, that's for sure.
Writing poetry, yes.
Right. She published her first book of poems in 1826, and she was popular both in England and in America. She was kind of introduced into the literary life by her cousin, John Kenyon. But it wasn't until much later that the whole story of Sonnets of the Portuguese came about. She actually may have gotten tuberculosis later in life. She was ill again. She was ill for much of her life. And because of her father, she was a good daughter. And because her father didn't want her to get married, she basically devoted her life to poetry. She was very anti-slavery, and she was also against child labor. She wrote several poems about these subjects that were hotly debated. The family did suffer some losses when slavery was abolished, which was during their lifetime, but they were still fairly wealthy, so it didn't really hurt her much. But her father would have disowned her had she married. So here she is. She's ill. Her mother dies. One of her brothers dies. Another brother, who is her favorite, dies because he stays behind at Torquay to sail, which she encouraged. And so she feels really bad that he died because of what she encouraged him to do. She's depressed. She's very ill. She's looking at, you know, probably not living very long. And this is, you know, in her mid to late 30s. She publishes her book of poetry in 1844. It was very popular, and she receives a letter from young Robert Browning. He is 6 years younger than she is. He is not as wealthy nor as popular as she is. There's everything in the world to say no to this relationship in that day and time. And yet they fall in love. What I didn't know when I read Sonnets from the Portuguese the first time was that these were not written and given to Robert Browning. These were written while she was corresponding with him and trying to figure out their relationship. They are her way of trying to come to grips with all of the desperate emotions that she had at the time. Her life literally took a U-turn. I mean, she was expecting to die. She was certainly not expecting to fall in love and get married. And then this young gentleman shows up. She goes through, you know, ecstasy, and then she wonders, you know, will I bring him down because I'm so I'm an invalid and I'm old and I'm depressed and full of grief from all these things. So that's really what the sonnets are. And she did not show them to him until they'd been married for 3 years.
Wow. Yeah.
That was really a shock to me. I didn't know that.
Yeah, all the feeling and emotion is kept there in the poems. It's this place for her to release it all and work things out, as you say.
Right. And she kept it this very strict sonnet form. This is an early one. This is number 3. And you can tell how she's really struggling with this idea. Unlike are we, unlike, O princely heart, unlike our uses and our destinies. Our ministering two angels look surprised on one another as they strike athwart their wings in passing. Thou, bethink me, art a guest for queens to social pageantries with gauges from 100 brighter eyes than tears can ever make mine, to ply thy part of chief musician. What hast thou to do with looking from the lattice lights at me, a poor, tired, wandering singer, singing through the dark and leaning up a cypress tree? The chrism is on thine head, on mine the dew, and death must dig the level where these agree. She descends to some pretty, you know, dark thoughts.
Not so hopeful about how things are going to turn out between them.
Yeah, and she's just, it's a really interesting to read them all. You see her, you know, trusting and then not trusting both herself and Robert Browning. I mean, as I say, this was a very unlikely match. He was younger. He was not as wealthy nor as popular as she was. She was very popular at the time. But they persevered. Her friendly cousin, who had gotten her into publishing in the first place, arranged for them to meet. And they eventually married in secret and moved to Pisa, Italy. She was indeed cut off by her father, but she had a small inheritance from her grandmother, so they were not poor. And surprisingly enough, at age 43, which is extraordinarily old at that time, they had a son.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really remarkable, and she had 15 lovely years of marriage to him that was the happy part of her life. It was just a remarkable, remarkable life. And I think about the courage that it must have taken mm-hmm. to do that in that day and age when she'd lived so long under the thumb of her father, you know, and when it was against everything that society told you to do. It was a remarkable thing to do.
Yeah,
it really was.
Definitely a story of how love is triumphant here.
Yeah. Here's number 23 when she's starting to decide, you know, that maybe she should do this. Is it indeed so? If I lay here dead, wouldst thou miss any life in losing mine? And would the sun for thee more coldly shine because of grave damps falling round my head? I marveled, my beloved, when I read thy thoughts so in a letter. I am thine, but so much to thee? I can pour thy wine while my hands tremble? Then my soul, instead of dreams of death, resume life's slower range. Then love me, love. Look on me, breathe on me, as brighter ladies do not count it strange for love to give up acres and degree. I yield the grave for thy sake and exchange my near sweet view of heaven for earth with thee.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah, yield the grave.
Yeah, so exactly. She's really, I mean, she's got death on one hand, love on the other. It's pretty remarkable. I really, really enjoyed reading this again with that perspective. And I would encourage you, even if the language is a little off-putting, that you might try it. It doesn't take very long. You know, it's a short piece. And it might introduce you to some of her other work. One of the things she wrote later was a novel in verse form called mm-hmm. Aurora Leigh, which was very popular both here and in England. And it's surprisingly approachable. It's not rhyming verse, it's blank verse. So she's not saddled with all the kinds of strange language that they tended to use when they had to rhyme. It's a really interesting story. It's about a young woman becoming an artist.
There we are. Well, definitely on the classic list, as everyone has been exposed to it, and it maintained, and it's held its strength over time.
It has.
What do we have next month, Mary?
Next month should be very interesting. We're reading John Dewey on education, and it might turn some heads on what his ideas were about how to educate a democratic society.
Right. We often read a lot of literature, poetry, plays, but this is more of a philosophy and kind of sociology look at things. So
right.
So that'll be very interesting. So we'll look forward to all of you reading along with us, a little John Dewey this month, and we'll see you next month on Classics Now. For Mary Harper, this is Solomon Uverta. Have a classic day.